Hey, Jets fans, want $50 off your next round of drinks? Try Tap RM. They deliver the drinks right to your door so you can skip the lines and trips to the liquor store. Discover new and exclusive drinks or shop for your favorites. Don't worry, they've got all the options for you. Order your first round at taprm.com and get $50 off your first order using promo code JETS50. $50 off $100 a beer, not a bad deal. I would highly recommend it. I've done it. Connor's done it. Joe's gotten it. So make sure you go to taprm.com, use promo code JETS50, skip the lines, and get $50 off your first $100 worth of beer. $100 in beer for $50, can't beat that. Now let's get into the pod.
Setting up, looking downfield. He's going to heave a bomb for Corey Davis at the goal line, into the end zone. He's got it! That's a Jet touchdown!
Jets select Zach Wilson, quarterback, BYU.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Turn of the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Will Parkinson, at WillPod11 on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Joined by a special guest today, Robbie Sabo of Jets X Factor, co-founder, Pro Football Writers Association. Robbie, how you doing today?
Will, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
I'm excited. We can do this pod after a win. We were going to do it last week. It would have been coming after a loss. So at least we could do this after a win. Obviously the Jets beat the Texans last Sunday, 21-14. Zach Wilson made his return. The defense stepped up. I think they held the Texans to just 25 yards in the second half. So obviously nicer to talk after a win. We'll get into the Eagles preview pretty quickly, but what were your initial takeaways from Sunday's win and Zach Wilson's performance overall?
I mean, it was ugly. It's as ugly as it gets in the NFL. They bullied, credit LaFleur, credit the Jets offensive line. They bullied the Texans on the ground and especially off the edge. You know, there was a lot of stuff off the edge where, you know, Lovie Smith just had no answer. I don't know what they were doing at times. I was pulling my hair out as a defensive guy at times, as a defensive coach. But still, credit the Jets. That run game set up everything. And also credit LaFleur for allowing Wilson to try to make plays on first down. It's a critical thing, especially when your quarterback is just completely in his own head. And that's the thing with Zach right now. It's not, we've seen what he could do physical, you know, attribute wise, but it's all mental. It's all between the ears. How do you snap him out of it is the question. It's good and bad news, because the good news is he's not this bad, but the bad news is, why is he in such a funk, and what can you do to get him out of it? I think what LaFleur did against Houston was a step in the right direction. Struggled early, missing guys, lack of touch. And I know I've seen better touch from him in college, even in August, even against Carolina. I keep saying this. It seems like week two, Bill Belichick, and I hate this narrative that Bill Belichick screws quarterbacks, which he does, but I hate how it's grown to such a large degree. But I feel like week two is when everything switched, and he's just been in his own head since. So the inaccuracies are there based on the mental stuff that's happening right now. Coming out in the third quarter, he simplified it. I think it was a one-man route on that first completion, play action, Elijah Moore. I believe it was first down too. Then the second completion to Elijah Moore, it was a more complex route. And I think Houston ran a cover six. So credit Wilson for reading that. But, you know, LaFleur is doing everything right. And I think that's the big takeaway.
Yeah, the Zach stuff is frustrating in part, but it's also, I think me and we've talked about this a bunch, and I've talked about this a lot of people. I don't have any expectation right now. It's frustrating that he hasn't really, outside of seven quarters I'd give him total this year, you know, some second half of Carolina, three quarters of Tennessee, and probably two quarters of this game, hasn't really looked good. He's actually looked pretty awful. He's always probably been the worst starting quarterback outside of those seven quarters. But a couple of factors: one, all these rookies have been pretty awful. Trevor Lawrence has thrown one touchdown in his last six games. Justin Fields had the same stat line as Zach Wilson and in a similar situation. He's almost in a different situation just because of the head coach and things of that nature, but he's got more talent around him, probably just not a good staff. And then you obviously look at Mac Jones and people are, you know, the comparisons, it's frustrating. You watch the Patriots stuff and you get frustrated, but you know, Jacoby Brissett looked like a pretty legit guy in that offense too, without experience. And so did Jimmy Garoppolo. So while I want to give Mac credit, I also don't want to go overboard. So the Zach stuff, the slow starts have happened every week. It's 1-6, 1-7 every week. It doesn't matter who the opponent is, doesn't matter who's in the booth, who's not in the booth, who's out there, who's not. It's just the same stuff. Even the Titans game, which we forget, everyone forgets, Zach was the rookie of the week, and he was pretty awesome in that game. He still missed three or four throws early, and then he missed that one to seal the game to Corey Davis. So, like, there is the ups and downs of a rookie, but he has responded well. I just think that people have to, like, Sam used to, like, once he sputtered, it was over. And, like, that's where, like, that was the frustration with Sam, is, like, any adversity is gone. Zach, I almost feel like, thrives when the adversity is there, which is a good thing. But you can't be starting – you can't give teams 14 points early. I want to get your quick take on the interception, because I've seen a lot of discourse on what – you know, on film, we both watched it. It didn't look as bad, but I still think – slide for the 4 yards, like you're, it's 3rd and 17, punting your own end zone, you know, out of your own end zone. What are your thoughts on that interception?
Yeah. And to your point, your overarching point, you're exactly right. You don't want to go too crazy. I mean, listen, he's still a rookie. He's only played a handful of games. Don't go too crazy. And that's where people run into trouble. You know, when you see, you know, someone bring up a coaching point or, hey, you should have done this. That doesn't mean he's a failure and he's going to be a failure. You just got to keep it in perspective. He's got the goods. It's just a matter of figuring it out mentally. The interception, you're right. The way Lovey was playing, Houston was playing, it was really lagged, 3rd and 17. That's where the quarterback mind needs to take over in terms of interlinking each unit and just living to, you know, play the play to live another day. So yeah, pick up some yards, slide, but, you know, save for the situation. If the situation's not thought about, not included, it's just one of those miscommunication plays. You know, you're trying to make something happen. Ty Johnson's looking at the ball. When he flips it, it's unfortunate, but you're right. When the situation's factored in, which is critical, which is everything, you got to play it a little safer.
And it's interesting because earlier in the game, or actually it was after that, like he learned, like again, learned, I'm down by the goal line. I know Dan Orlovsky kind of did a breakdown on it and people felt one way or another. That's not the point. The point is, like, he did throw the ball away, even though he missed the guy. You know, he might've had somebody open. He still, he threw it away and learned, which is a good thing. But there was two other plays I wanted to kind of get your insight on. One, the play where he fumbled. I've watched this clip like 30 times and I really feel like a confident Zach Wilson that's feeling himself hits Elijah Moore in timing, and that's a 10, 15, 20-yard game, maybe a house call if Elijah breaks a tackle. Zach, like, did everything right from a read perspective, it felt like, and just got, like, and just, like, double clutch for a second. In the NFL, you can't do that. He gets sacked, gets a fortuitous bounce for not fumbling. And then the second play, actually, we'll go with that one first, then we'll go to the goal line, play down by the goal line, which I know you, you know, have had a lot of conversations around.
Let's go with the goal line first.
Right, go line first.
Yeah, go line first. Because I want to watch the fumble one again in real time.
Yeah.
The goal line one with the Elijah Moore whip route, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, listen, making that play is an all-world play. That's a all-world anticipation and touch quarterback play. No one's denying that. The key takeaway to me is Elijah Moore, he's the first read. He's ISO. And you're seeing a lot more of that too, where LaFleur is putting him in ISO situations, but he's not trusting his eyes in terms of reading the leverage. If you look at the play, the way Moore ran the route, the hips were completely turned in, even beyond turned in, more on a, you know, 45 degree angle towards the right flag, the right back pylon. So if you read that leverage, you're thinking about, as a quarterback, you're thinking about loading it up and throwing it right when the break happens and even put touch on it and try to lead him towards the front left pylon. That wasn't in his head whatsoever. He wanted to see it open first. Now, the number one culprit on the play is the protection, obviously, because if the protection's there, he hits Cole on the backside over or slant, whatever you want to call it. So keep it in perspective. The protection's the number one thing. Number two thing is Wilson. Just not anticipating like we know he can. And that's the other thing. We've seen him anticipate. He can do it. It just comes down to confidence.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. The thing with that play down by the goal line, which was, I guess, again, it's a good thing and a bad thing. Like, you'd like to see anticipation. You'd like to see the confidence. I like that he didn't force it when, like, he could have, quite easily forced that play. And then, you know, he throws a pick down by the goal line, and it's like, Jesus Christ, like, you can't be late. You can't be late there. But at the same time, you don't have to be late if you just are confident and pull the trigger, right? So it's like, both things go hand in hand. While you're watching the Elijah Moore one, my only issue with this play was just simply that, like, he's a guy that can make this throw easily. He has the velocity to do it. He has the timing, the athleticism to do it. If you guys watch this play, I feel like he does a great job. He looks off the linebacker quickly, three-step drop, and bang, if he just plants and fires, that's a great game there. Elijah Moore runs a beautiful route. Yeah, the safety is buzzing down, but Zach has the velocity to get that in there. I just feel like he double clutches and he's not confident in himself at the moment. And then you see a play where, you know, that could be a turnover and the Jets end up getting points out of the drive and it's great. But that's, again, like, just grip it and go with your instincts. Like, he's good enough to do this stuff. It's not as if there's not talent or the brains to do it.
Yeah. And you played, I mean, the worst thing you could do as an athlete, it doesn't matter at any level, but it's worse at the highest level is think while playing. You know, when you're shooting a three, you can't think about shooting a three. You just have to react. You just have to, it needs to be mechanical. It needs to be, your thought needs to be, this ball's going in. Because the moment you start thinking about it and start doubting yourself, everything starts falling apart. Thinking is reserved for during the week, you know, in preparation, which Wilson is tremendous at. I just wonder if he's overthinking it maybe during the week a little too much. I don't know, but that's the thing. He's just not confident. It comes down to confidence. And as a coaching staff, you got to make sure he's not so afraid of killing his team, you know, a la Sanchez, because I think that hurt Sanchez a lot. You know, Sanchez had other problems too, but that was a big problem with the defensive first mindset of the coaching staff. It's a fine tightrope between that, not killing him, not killing his opportunities, his chances, and going too reckless. So how they navigate it is going to be interesting.
One other thing I want to touch on with Zach, and this kind of gets, we'll start getting into the preview a little bit of this Eagles game. He started awful pretty much every single game. This Jets offense, outside of a couple of drives, the Cincinnati game really is the one that stands out. But other than that, and the New England game, I guess the second drive they got going a little bit before Zach got hurt, but they can't seem to start fast. It's almost like this coaching staff, when they're not on script, both defensively and offensively, like, adjust really well, which is a compliment to the staff. And I think these guys are savvy staff in that sense. But what do you think needs to change for them to get this offense rolling? I know people got upset at Rich for asking yesterday, but like, it's a legitimate question. Zach, even his best games, has not played well in the first quarter. It's like he can't complete a pass and then takes a few hits and snaps into it. How would you try to get him rolling early and often on Sunday?
I keep allowing him to operate at a first down, keep giving him those first down chances, because the worst thing you could do is get yourself in third and bad situations for a young quarterback. Now, is it as simple as that? No, because it depends on whether or not you feel you could run against the front. Like against Houston, they could run. They could run all day. So they did the right thing. Even though LaFleur did give him opportunities on first down, which I loved. But against the Eagles, I think that's going to be a big thing. Let him free on first down. Keep it simple, especially early. You know, the first few series, first down, let him go. And then kind of evaluate after that and see where you're at.
Yeah, the Eagles are an interesting defense. I feel like up front they're pretty damn good. Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargraves of the world, and you got Josh Sweat and Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett, by the way, the most penalized defensive lineman in football. So
is he?
Yeah, and it's like every week. He's the Nate Shepard on their team of, like, he's much better, obviously, but he's the same where, like, you just know when he's on the field there's going to be a penalty at some point. I'm curious if the Jets were going to be able to actually draw a rough in the passer call, because I know one's coming on Sunday. There's no doubt about that. And I don't want to get too deep into the offensive line protecting Zach or these quarterbacks or not. I'll say on that topic is I don't need hands thrown and I don't need people choking other guys out and getting stupid penalties, but there needs to be a little bit more of a team first mindset from that group as a whole and not playing for yourself and your individual career, because it's not a good look, and other teams and other staffs, all other 31 teams that watch film do see this stuff. And I would be, if I was myself in that position, I would be very cautious of being labeled as a guy who does not play, does not defend your quarterback. I think that's a bad place to be in the NFL.
I agree with that. And what's interesting is defensively, I think they have the opposite problem sometimes. Where
they're all up with, like, they defend Zach all the time. Sheldon Rankins is, like, going to die on the sword of Zach Wilson.
Yeah, and on top of that, they defensively, where they get into trouble, like the Colts game, for instance, the Pats game, they start playing hero ball. They start freelancing. They don't focus on their one individual responsibility. So in a way, they're playing selflessly more, but it's hurting the team. You know, defensively, you have to focus on your one responsibility, your read, and because that's the way a defensive unit functions, most importantly. And I'm looking at the fumble play, by the way, too. Yeah, it's right before the end of the first half, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a matter of confidence again. I mean, he feels the pressure. He knows it's coming. Houston shows six. They only rush four. It's either a cover one or cover three. So it's man with one deep. It's like we're talking about. It's just a matter of confidence. And he's not pulling the trigger unless he's absolutely safe most of the time. And he just can't do that in the NFL.
No, you cannot. Doesn't matter how much talent you have. Obviously, we mentioned, look, the Eagles play a lot of soft zone. They've started to blitz more as the season's gone on, which I think they're going to run a lot of stunts. It's the one thing that, quite frankly, the reason I think I'm leaning towards picking the Eagles is strictly because the interior defensive line. And look, I'm really excited to watch AVT on Sunday. And this is not me calling AVT out anyway. He did not practice all camp, and he first came back, and Fletcher Cox tossed him around like a rag doll, got in his face, was talking a ton of trash. You were there. I was there. It was pretty evident Fletcher Cox was like, welcome to the league. Fletcher Cox does that to everybody. So it's not an indictment at AVT in any way, shape, or form. Do not get sensitive, Jets fans. Like, it's a fact. But there's an opportunity now with 12 games under his belt, or 10 games or 11 games under his belt, to be like, nah, I got this. Like, I'm going to be able to take this over and communicate and kind of cement myself here. I think it's a huge test for LDT. I think it's a huge test for Connor McGovern. Can they communicate properly? Because the Denver game to me stands out big time. Carolina as well, where like, they just ran a million stunts and were like, stop us. And the Jets finally did in Carolina, and they scored points. But what are you expecting offensively from the Jets on Sunday? How do they, you know, outside of Darius Slay, I don't think the rest of the unit's very good. But that defensive line and Darius Slay are no joke.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, like you said. I mean, here's the good thing. They finally have confidence on the ground, right? This is the first time all year where they can really say, hey, we did a number on a team. And it doesn't matter how bad Houston is. I mean, it does matter. But in terms of confidence, they have that going into the game. So whether that carries over as a unit, you know, the same five guys too, pretty much, is going to be a big thing. And what they do in terms of Fletcher Cox specifically is going to be another, you know, thing to focus on. AVT, we all know he's incredible. His athleticism for his size is ridiculous. But more importantly, his mentality is spot on. You need that mentality as an offensive lineman where you're going to say to yourself, you are my enemy and I'm going to bury you on this day. And those are the guys who really separate themselves. And I think ABT's that. Again, it's that tightrope, that walk in that tightrope. What does LaFleur do early? Does he go back to the Shanahan way where he thinks and he believes his offensive line can get it done and set up third and manageable or second and good for Zach Wilson? Or does he let it free on first down and then reevaluate? That's going to be a very interesting thing. I think it's going to be the latter. I think he's moved towards, we got to get Zach Wilson going. And if our quarterback isn't going and feeling right,
then we'll go back to the run game.
Yeah, nothing we do on the ground is going to work anyway. I mean, against Houston, sure. But other teams, no. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do, to see how much Philly blitzes, that defensive coordinator. Gannon doesn't really blitz much. Like you said, they've been blitzing a little bit more. So we'll see. And we'll see how far they stay away from Slay, too, and what they do in terms of covering Elijah Moore.
Yeah, I was just going to ask two-part question or kind of comment. And then my biggest, you know, I kind of went on a rant about this on a couple of different shows this week, but look, the Jets beating Houston, we can talk all the trash as a Jets fan or covering the Jets you want about Houston. People look at the Jets the same way they look at Houston until otherwise. And the Jets had to go on the road and won a football game against a team with the same record as them. I know the Texans are a mess, but like the Jets could be, you could look at the Jets and say the same thing. I know that's not the truth. And if you evaluate it further, you obviously see that. But let's just pump the brakes on like, oh, the Jets only beat the Texans. Cool. Well, the Jets haven't won a road game in like a year and a half. So I don't know what to tell you, man. Like it's important to win.
When people are calling the Jets the worst team in the league by far, and it's pretty much their own fans in the media doing that and going overboard, there are times when the fans deserve one or two. You know, you beat a team on the road. A road win in the NFL is impressive no matter who the team is. I mean, how impressive is up to you to decide, but I agree.
Yeah. No, it's like you beat good teams and people are annoyed that Mike White beat them. Then you beat a bad team and you're pissed Zach Wilson managed the game at the end and whatever. But first time since the Jets since 2018 came back from double digits on the road. So that's a whole nother discussion. But obviously Elijah Moore is kind of is wide receiver one. I think I've seen you talk about this as well. He's the pretty cemented wide receiver one. Obviously Corey Davis is up in the air at this moment, Friday. You know, whether he plays, he practiced today and apparently looked fine. But hasn't practiced really in like a week and a half. So it's, if anything, maybe he's a limited rep guy. Denzel Mims is back. Keelan Cole is out. How do you think the Jets kind of rotate through these guys? And do you see the Eagles kind of just throwing Darius Slay out there? He doesn't really travel, but you see them try to travel with Elijah because Xavier Howard got cooked and he's a better corner than Darius Slay, in my opinion.
I think they won't travel initially, but you know, if Wilson does enough early on, I think they'll adjust. If I had to guess right now, that's what I think they'll start out in. And especially if Corey Davis plays, I think Corey Davis is going to be a game time decision right now, but he's leaning towards playing, if I'm not mistaken. I wasn't there today, but I think I saw DJ say that. Game time decision. So I don't think he'll travel initially, but they'll have to adjust.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. Like, look, and you're at camp every day. I was at camp a lot, and the Denzel Mims stuff was tough to kind of handle from the outside perspective if you weren't there, because it's like, look, this guy flashes in games, and obviously he's had a couple moments this year, but at the same time, and it's not me being hypercritical of Denzel, because I think he is a really hard worker, and everything I've heard from people around him is he's a hard worker, and he's trying to be good, he's got all the attributes. Yeah. You know, my stuff is more in his route running and getting off press and little things. But at the same time, the opportunity in Cincinnati, people drop balls, it happens. But like, you drop a touchdown when you're trying to cement yourself in the rotation. The Colts game, 5 targets and there's 2.5. I mean, you can give him 3 drops or 2 drops, whatever, however you want to phrase it. You drop 60% of your passes. This coaching staff is what's important and sours on them. And what I'd like to see from Mims, and I'll get to you, obviously, if people who are familiar with the Shanahan doghouse, a lot of that stuff is going to be, you know, be with the Jets. And we've seen that with Denzel Mims so far, right? You've seen a lot of tendencies, Kyle and Mike and the Floor Brothers, all this different stuff. Brandon Ayuk was in this doghouse, who's a more proven same second year guy, very similar actually to Denzel Mims in a lot of senses. He got himself not only out of the doghouse, but he started just kicking people's asses in the run game. He's one physical dude, and Denzel Mims could do the same thing. And I'd love to see on Sunday, if they run the ball early, put someone in the turf, like put a corner on their ass early and be like, I'll do whatever it takes to get on the field. That's how you start to earn some trust from the staff. How do you feel about Mims kind of right now? And if he can make an impact, if at all, you know, on Sunday.
Well, Mims, it's such a fascinating topic, right? It's like the perfect storm. When you're a fan base and you're just aching for weapons and playmakers, you'll hold on to guys more. And he's a second round talent. It was late second round, but he's a second round talent. He dropped in the draft. He even held out. Jets fans wanted him. Douglas traded down and still got him. So it's the perfect storm. Also, Jets history of second round receivers is not good. So Jets fans really want this guy to be great. So it's the perfect storm. Like you said too, he's a great run blocker. I hope he gets a chance this Sunday. They could use him. Obviously, it depends on what happens with Corey Davis. You know, if Corey Davis is not playing, I would expect Mims to be outside. And then a rotation of the other three guys, obviously Moore out there too, doing his thing. But that's another thing. You can't put Moore slot exclusive. I hear a lot about this. Slot exclusive for Moore.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Listen, in this offense, you got to play multiple positions and you want more to be free to run motion, jet motion, orbit motion, do things, do specific things on particular plays. So does Mims play? I don't know. I hope so, because I do love how he gets after it in the run game. And I still think, listen, even though it's been a tough year, he still has a lot of talent. He's still really young. So he's a valuable asset. And I think people shouldn't lose sight of that.
Yeah, look, he's a 22-year-old kid, and he's in year two. He's had a tough break of injuries and the salmon stuff and got COVID. And it's like, it's been tough, but he got six games similar to, you know, what we might see with Mekhi Becton if and when he comes back. You know, you get a couple games under your belt. You look at Zach Wilson. You look at a lot of these guys, right? Or, you know, and Ashton Davis, who I think has been playing much, much better week over week. The reps, like, he started to slow down a little bit in a good way. I think he was playing fast in like not a good way. And safety is a top position, but look, if Ashton Davis has another 5-6 good games where he starts to stack them together, now you feel a little bit better about Ashton Davis in year three than going, we need two new safeties plus two new depth guys. Offensively for the Eagles,
Mims wants to play just simply because of the Philly comment.
Yeah. No, that.
Let's just see what happens there.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. The Eagles have been kind of in between. You know, they've been holding out in terms of when people listen to this, Jalen Hurts might get announced he's playing or not. As of, you know, mid-afternoon Friday, he's up in the air. Usually that's a sign that he's not going to play. Jalen Hurts obviously adds the second leading quarterback rusher in the NFL. He obviously adds a ton in the run game. He's had some games where he's looked good through the air, and there's some other games where, like last week, where it's an unmitigated disaster. Gardner Minshew beat the Jets 2 years ago. He's a guy that's, you know, the Ryan Fitzpatrick-ish, you know, you don't know what kind of Gardner Minshew you're going to get.
Yeah.
Who do you think is a better matchup for the Jets, A, and then B, how do you think this defense can slow down the best rushing attack, you know, them and the Ravens in the NFL?
It's such a tough call because what's the Jets' strength defensively?
Some games they can kick other offensive lines ass a little bit up front, and yeah. CJ Mosley and Quincy fly around sometimes.
They should be able to, but then I think what happens is the scheme comes back to bite them in the ass sometimes. When offenses run longer developing, you know, misdirection type runs, gap principled runs instead of zone, it hurts them sometimes because this solid defense is an attacking 4-3. You know, one gap defense. So if you go too far downhill and you're not responsible, you're not thinking, okay, what is the offense trying to do to us? Because yeah, we know the run plays that they're calling, but not every run call is the same. You know, backside has to stay home a lot more in longer when you're facing teams that try to hit you from a longer developing perspective, which Philly does a lot. So I don't know. I think Minshew might be the better matchup only because Eagles can run the hell out of the ball. So if Hurts is in there and Hurts is that extra X factor where, you know, you got to pay attention to him, you have to be responsible for him on every run play. That puts a lot of pressure on JFM on the edge and whoever else is playing the other edge rotating. And you really don't want that. You want them to be a lot freer. And JFM, for what he's good at, you know, he's really an interior guy, even though he's playing the outside. And I think the plan coming into the year was having him play everywhere, play interior, play outside. But the injuries with Lawson, Curry, and Huff now have hurt that. So I think Minshew, just for the simple fact, they won't have to adjust the defense so so harshly, because if it's Hurts, you know, I'm playing one deep, I'm getting that extra guy in the box nearly every play until Hurts proves he could beat me downfield.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was going to say, Jalen Reagor hasn't exactly had the start to his career. You think Eagles fans are annoyed? I mean, Jets fans are annoyed with Denzel Mims. Right. I've been on a couple of Eagles shows this week. He's super talented, but when you have Justin Jefferson and Chase Claypool and all these guys after him, it's Pittman and Von Jeff. It's just like, oof, it's ugly. It's ugly. But, and you know, obviously we talk a little bit about both sides of the ball. I'm going to give you a scenario. If X happens, the Jets win the football game. And if X happens for the Eagles will win the football game.
Okay.
So if we'll go Jets first. If the Jets get a win on Sunday, it'll be because X happened.
It'll be because their run fits are buttoned up. It'll be because the front is actually honing in on each person is honing in on their individual read.
All right, I'm going to go with if Zach Wilson throws 2+ touchdowns, the Jets win more than two. I think they win on Sunday because that means they're probably moving the ball pretty effectively. Zach Wilson's in a good rhythm. He probably has to start relatively early. And the games where he's thrown 2 touchdowns, the Jets have either, have been twice, and they lost 19-14 and probably would have won that game if they get the one holding call on the jet sweep to McCaffrey. And then they obviously beat the Titans. If thing X happens for the Eagles, who are 7-point favorites on the road for a second straight week, win.
I'll stay with the same theme if they run over for 125 yards.
Yeah, I think for me, it's if the Eagles don't turn the ball over, one or less turnovers, they're going to probably win pretty handily. If you look at the games where they cooked New Orleans, which was, it's crazy to think about how stout New Orleans was last night on Thursday Night Football, facing like 4 or 5 turnovers, maybe our best offense in football or one of the best offenses. And it felt like outside of the one big run, like they stifled Dallas, and then the Eagles, threw 40 on them. And, the Bills obviously put up a ton of points. The Bills put up points on everybody, but I think the Eagles win if they don't turn the ball over. I just really feel like that offense, if you're the way they run the ball, the way they're not prolific through the air, obviously. I think Jalen Hurts has 200-300-yard games. I may be mistaken, it might be one more. If you turn the ball over, Jets fans know if you play good defense and you run the ball, all those, most of those really good Jets teams are pretty much our whole lives. It's when Sanchez had 3 picks, like you weren't winning, or 2 fumbles or whatever. So do you have any Jets Eagles memories? Because there's only been 11 matchups and they haven't really been great.
And that's why it's so fascinating too, if Minshew plays, is that it hurts because everything changes drastically. Any Jets Eagles memories? That's a good question. I think I remember, what was it, the game when they were in their Titans uniforms where, who was it, Curtis, the receiver for Philly? He had a huge game against them like 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. And that just sticks in my mind every time I think of Jets Eagles.
Probably the 2011 game, which was just the worst. That game, I don't think we knew at the time, but like it all fell apart after that game. Yeah, it was the Titans. Yes. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, what an ugly game.
That was the beginning of the end. And then, the Victor Cruz play just cemented it. And then boom. The roster just kept deteriorating from there.
Yeah, Eric Smith couldn't catch him, and then the disaster in Miami. We'll finish you off with this. What are your? I guess we'll do two quick ones. Two more quick ones here. What would you like to see from Zach over the next 6 games to have you feel pretty good going into year 2? Like the Jets could take a pretty big wins leap. Obviously, the rest of the roster aside, like how good does Zach have to play for you to feel like, all right, I feel pretty good about him right now?
I think it's a matter of, is it a stats? It's just a matter of mindset and confidence. If I could see him take a deep breath at some point and not lose that, it doesn't have to be a monumental leap. Just something where you say, okay, he's within himself now. He looks comfortable. If that happens and he rides that out, I'll feel really good going into next year.
We'll finish with this one. I'm on the same page here. I think stats are tough. Sam Darnold was the highest rated QBR over the last month of his rookie year. And looking at it, in hindsight, I think what something was important with this Houston game was the Jets even though as great as Sam played in those games, which if you look back, he was really, really good. Like there's
he was.
The Packers game was probably the most fun Jets game outside of like, you know, some of the random wins here or there. They're like a Jets loss. Like you couldn't ask for anything better in that situation. Now I'm like a diehard Rodgers guy. He's going to win the MVP in my opinion again this year. But the Jets won in spite of their quarterback, which they very rarely have been able to do in a lot of these years. And I think if you can see some games where they win because of Zach, similar to Tennessee, in my opinion, obviously the D-line was fantastic and whatever, but they won because Zach was awesome in that second half. That's the stuff you all I'd like to see. I'd like to see maybe one or two games where they win because of Zach, or like Zach was like trying to put them on his back a little bit, but also just the confidence you mentioned, I think is super, super important.
No, it's a very good point. Yeah, it goes hand in hand. That would be tremendous where he comes up huge in a moment, in a game, in a second half where it allows him to feel a lot more comfortable moving forward.
Lastly, is there one guy outside of Zach Wilson that you're really excited to watch over these six games that can either take a leap to being a legitimate stud or somebody that's a fringe roster guy or a fringe starter that can kind of set themselves on a good trajectory going into 2022?
We'll go with the two Elijahs. Elijah Moore, obviously, we know what he is, but can he keep moving up the ladder? Everyone thinks yes, and I don't see a reason why he wouldn't. And then Elijah Riley defensively. He's not flashy. I don't know where Douglas found this kid. Army products from Philly, using those Philly connections, I assume. He's just smart. He's not flashy, but he's very smart. I still got to watch more film on him in Houston, specifically looking at him. But him and Ashton Davis, I mean, Ashton Davis still he's very athletic. Is some of the instincts he's missing, Ashton Davis, but it's the opposite with Riley. Riley has the instincts. Riley's smart. He works well within certain situations, certain schemes, certain plays. So I think that moving forward, seeing where that leads, seeing that leads to the box score and certain things in terms of visuals on TV is a really big thing moving forward. Because if you found something in this kid at safety, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, then it makes either, you know, retaining Marcus May maybe on a second year deal where he's rehabbing, refranchise tagging, which is what I think they should do. And you roll again with maybe another draft pick, Elijah Riley, Ashton, and Marcus May. And you've upgraded the rest of the roster. I think you're in a much better situation. For me, the two guys I'm most interested to see over these next six games, one of them is going to be, I was going to go with Ashton Davis. We kind of just talked about the safeties. I think, again, he still makes one or two plays a game where he takes a bad angle or his eyes, you know, he doesn't feel the game, but like he's a walk-on at Cal. He's played football for literally like 7 years of his life. And he's like, he's probably the best athlete on their team. Like a pure just athlete. If he can start.
That's the best thing about him. He's a hard worker who improves each day. And that's what you want.
Yeah, and like I've noticed some plays. He's created four turnovers. Him and CJ Mosley, I believe, and maybe I'm missing one guy, like have created the most turnovers. So, and then the other guy's Quincy Williams. And I know anyone that follows me on Twitter knows I was not a fan or listened to the podcast. I was pretty harsh on Quincy the first 2 weeks, and I was really disappointed in Joe Douglas having a second waiver claim in the entire league and could have claimed as many guys as possible. He claims Tim Ward and Quincy Williams. I'm like, God, man, like there's a really good chance here for them to address some real needs. And I knew off ball linebacker was a need, but I just felt like Quincy was overdrafted and Jacksonville's a mess. And then the Tennessee game happens. I'm like, it was really cool. But like one game, they didn't have any receivers. It's, you know, Derrick Henry and it's hard to tackle, but it's perfect for Quincy. Just sideline to sideline, just hit people. Mm-hmm. And then it's like after the Denver game, all of a sudden it's like he started to like really like play really good football. And I think being next to CJ Mosley helps him for sure, because he can kind of just be like a bat out of hell and just try to hit people and run a million miles an hour. And CJ's got to think. By the way, CJ looks so much healthier than he did weeks like 8 through 10. He looked like he kind of hit a wall there.
Yeah.
So, but no, Quincy, like if Quincy can continue to play well, and again, these guys like making it so the Jets do not need to overly address and overly spend at certain positions like off ball linebacker or safety, can help them invest more in offensive line, receiver, corner, edge, positions where I feel like they need to address early in the draft. Maybe you can wait till day three for an off-ball linebacker and safety. What's your Quincy Williams opinion? I saw you smiling when I brought him up.
I kind of felt the same way initially. And, you know, there are times where he's late. It's the instincts thing, but he is – he's willing to sell out on every play. And the athleticism, there's something there where you want to see more. So I'm in agreement with you 100%. Let me ask you this, though. Draft, right now as it stands, what position would you prefer, all things being equal? What position would you prefer with that first pick?
I want them, if they're in the top five, to go. If they can get one of the Aiden Hutchinson or Kayvon Thibodeau, I want them to draft them and just and run the card up if you can get either one. If not, I'd like them to trade back with one of the two top 10 picks. This is a cop-out answer, but I think unless you're in like the 8 through like 15 range, I don't know that I'd love to see them draft an offensive lineman. Just in the aspect of like, you've got a lot of money invested in tackle and you've got another first round pick coming back that I think people are like down on Becton, and like, he's not fat, guys. Like Robbie can attest to this. If you see Becton in person, there's not an ounce of fat on that guy. He just like, yeah, he's had some issues.
Yeah. He's not fat. He's not fat.
It's Zion Williams. Who might be fat. Mekhi Becton is not fat. I would like to see edge be a priority. At some point, I just think, as good as Bryce Huff, and everyone knows I love Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers, those guys as being like your gadget, we can move them anywhere and do a million things with them. And then you just solidify Carl Lawson, who, again, it's not hating on Carl Lawson, but he is a ticking time bomb at points. And the Jets found that out pretty quickly. Hopefully it'll be the same pattern where he stays healthy for a few years now. But edge, interior offensive line needs to be addressed in the first two rounds unless they sign somebody. And then I genuinely really think they need to add another wide receiver. And if you can add a guy like a Garrett Wilson or someone of that stature and Olave or whoever the Jets' preference might be, and I have to watch more film on these guys, obviously. I think if you go into the season, your roster has three legitimate guys who you could argue could be a one on a team. Yeah. And then like Denzel Mims and one of Kohler, Crowder, or Berrios is your five, like, or four, like, whoa, now we're talking. Like, tight end's the other one, by the way.
Yeah.
Tight end has got to be addressed, whether it's through Dalton Schultz, Dallas Goedert was a guy I was, you know, obviously campaigning for, I think anyone would, or Jeremy Ruckert out of Long Island, you know, at Ohio State from Long Island. Like, I'm just not all about corner and tackle for me, or positions that, like, I'm not sold the Jets need to invest like a top 10 pick in.
I'm the same way. I mean, in this league, yeah, you need weapons, you need corners, but Michael Carter's a player out of the slot. I think Hall is a number two easily. Even Echols has showed stuff. So that's a pleasant surprise that you really got to smile about if you're a Jets fan. But I'm on that train. Obviously, Thibodeau number one, edge is huge. And Lawson, listen, you want Lawson, you hope Lawson can return. But I'm of the mindset you really can't rely on a guy 100% if he misses one full year, you know? So you got to make sure you're good in that area. And then whatever he provides is, you know, an extra bonus. Obviously, he's slotted into start. There's no question about that, but you get the idea. So yeah. I'm on that trend.
Would you, I guess from a draft perspective, I think that like the Jets can go in so many different ways, and it's for the first time. Like, the problem is free agency is going to tell me a lot about what this team's going to look like. And if Joe Douglas is aggressive, then maybe they do trade back so that he can kind of balance it out and recoup an extra pick for next year and kind of move, you know, young talent down the line. The only, you know, off ball linebacker again is in safety positions where like in rounds, you know, 2 through 5, you could address and not have to spend premium capital in, but like the Jets are going to have 4 top 40 picks. Where they end up, you know, Carolina's a mess right now. I'm not sure Matt Rhule's there next year, which is another whole issue of maybe Deshaun Watson is, and there's a million different things there. But I just feel like if you can add weapons, guys that are like special top tier players, you have to do so. And edge, wide receiver, and corner are the positions that, like, you know, you invest, and obviously tackle as well, but the Jets have invested, like, you should not need 3, 4, 5 first round picks, premium first round picks at offensive line to have a good offensive line. You just, the Packers, this is my biggest example. And I'll let you go. I'm ranting right now, but
the
Packers had the best center in football last year, walked. They had David Bakhtiari, the best tackle in football last year, has not played a snap this year. They have Elgton Jenkins, who was one of the top 5 or 6 tackles, maybe top 15, whatever, towards ACL. And Rodgers doesn't get touched, and they play in the NFC North. So, like, if you develop these guys and you actually allocate assets properly, you should be able to build around Becton and AVT and not be stressing about a 3rd, 4th, or 5th guy. Again, Linderbaum's awesome, and if the Jets draft him, I will talk myself into it all day. But he would not be priority one for me personally as of December 3rd.
And two things. You can get interior offensive line later in the draft as well. And
Trey Smith.
And a knee drop. You know, geez. And number two, the quarterback covers up so much in terms of the offensive line. So the way I kind of look at it when building a program, you have to get the trenches to a certain level first. And that level doesn't have to be tops in the league. It just needs to be at a certain adequate level. Then the quarterback covers up a lot, you know, beyond that. And we're not at that stage yet where the quarterback's covering up the rest of what it could right now. So I'm kind of with you in terms of which position I favor number one. I don't know, but I'm on your train in terms of what you were just speaking.
Yeah, I think, and lucky you could trade back from like whatever 8 to 13 or something like the Giants did. You pick up an extra first round pick, and you still end up with Kyer Elam or Andrew Booth or Sauce Gardner as a corner instead of Stingley, who hasn't been as good since his freshman year. And I know Jets fans don't want to hear that, and I'm sure he'll be a fantastic NFL player, but LSU guys and the Jets have not exactly clicked from a culture or a you know, the Mo Claibornes of the world either. It's nothing personal. I just have horrible flashbacks. If you guys are not following Robbie on Twitter, make sure you're following Robbie Saba on Twitter. The Jet-esque stuff is all over. I assume anyone that's listening to this is also following you on Twitter, but if you're not, social, you know, jetxfactor.com, you guys do a fantastic job trying to use numbers and analytics and all that different stuff in the film and put it all together and give quality content.
Yeah, absolutely. It's analytics. We try to preach it like this. Analytics alone just doesn't do it. You know, sometimes film alone doesn't do it, even though I love film. So we kind of try to marry the two ideas where it supports each other. We're also on Google Play and the App Store too. So you could just search JetX Mobile and you know, find everything we put out on a daily basis.
We appreciate you hopping on. Obviously, you know, hoping for a Jets victory on Sunday, get them to 4-8 and get a little bit of momentum here. Most importantly, I guess, for the Twitter discourse, if Zach Wilson could play well, I think people would be far happier than they were 6 days ago. Obviously, we appreciate it as always, Robbie, and, you know, we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Will. Appreciate it.